I actually see a lot of parallels in the trajectory of divorced cis women and trans women. You live your life a certain way, thinking your life is going to look a certain way. And then there's a break or a realization where you're like, something hasn't worked. And then you have to start your life over.
Langston Hughes and Walt Whitman coming up on the Rainbow Minute.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappelle. UK Queen's Beach pledges conversion therapy ban. US tops yearly record for anti-queer laws in 4 months. And novel threesome upends gender in detransition, baby. Those stories and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Marcos Najera.
And I'm Michael LeBeau.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending May 15th, 2021. The UK government of Conservative Party Prime Minister Boris Johnson is finally moving forward with a plan to ban so-called conversion therapy. Queen Elizabeth II officially announced the move during her traditional speech at the state opening of Parliament on May 11th. Johnson has been under increasing pressure to take action against the debunked claim that queer people can be turned straight. His predecessor, Theresa May, made the ban part of her government's promises back in 2018. There may still be trouble ahead, however. A public consultation on the issue is to be held before any parliamentary consideration. And as the Queen's speech noted, the primary concern is to ensure medical professionals, religious leaders, teachers and parents can continue to be able to have open and honest conversations with people. Nancy Kelly of the British queer advocacy group Stonewall expressed concern about those religious-related exemptions. She insisted, "We don't need a consultation to know that all practices that seek to convert, suppress, cure, or change us are dangerous, abusive, and must be banned." Veteran activist Peter Tatchell denounced what he called countless studies and consultations on the issue in the past few years. He said, "All we've had is more than 1,000 days of dithering. It's time Boris got on with it and got this ban done." Meanwhile, the Washington Blade reports that a ban on conversion therapy has died in a committee of Puerto Rico's Senate.
The Biden administration continues to reverse the repressive anti-LGBTQ actions of the previous government. This week, U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Secretary Javier Becerra announced the reinstatement of Obama-era rules banning discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity in healthcare. Those provisions of the Affordable Care Act were dumped by the outgoing administration. Becerra cited last year's Supreme Court Bostock ruling. It declared LGBTQ people protected under provisions of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 that ban employment discrimination based on sex. Becerra noted that fear of discrimination can lead individuals to forego care, which can have serious negative health consequences. The Bostock decision has been cited in other federal cases involving LGBTQ rights. Pro-queer attorneys argue that, by extension, the employment bias ruling applies to other aspects of life, including health care. The Office for Civil Rights of the Health and Human Services Department will enforce the ban on health care bias by hospitals, clinics, and health care providers.
A 20-year-old Iranian man is dead this week, murdered in an honor killing by relatives who believed his sexual orientation brought shame to the family. Alireza Fazili Manfared was beheaded by his half-brother and cousins after they saw a government letter exempting him from military service because of his sexual depravity. He had planned to flee to Turkey with his boyfriend, but his time ran out. The murderers phoned Manfared's mother to tell her where to find his mutilated body under a tree outside of town. She was reportedly hospitalized in a state of shock over the death of her only child. A 2020 report by the Iranian Lesbian and Transgender Network reported that 6 in 10 LGBTQ people in the Islamic Republic have been assaulted by family members. Iranian law punishes consensual adult same-gender sex with life in prison or execution. The advocacy group reports that Monforet's half-brother and cousins have been arrested and charged with first-degree murder. Whether or not they'll actually be prosecuted remains to be seen.
Cameroonian online fashion celebrity Shakiro and her friend Patricia were sentenced this week to 5 years in prison for attempted homosexuality. Under the legal names Loic Njukam and Roland Moot, the two were arrested at a restaurant in the coastal city of Douala in February and have been in jail ever since. They were also convicted of failure to carry proper IDs and public indecency, presumably for wearing women's clothing. They each face another year behind bars if they fail to pay the additional equivalent of almost $400 in fines. Well-known regional LGBTQ legal advocate Alison Kom called the arrest and sentencing a political decision and plans to appeal because there was no evidence of actual homosexual acts. They were simply dining while trans. Human Rights Watch has condemned the arrests and sentencing, calling the move part of a stepped-up government crackdown on sexual and gender minorities. Cameroon is one of more than 30 African countries that continue to criminalize same-gender sex. The Global Rights Group says that at least 53 other Cameroonians have been arrested in raids on HIV/AIDS service organizations since May 2020. Some detainees reported being beaten while in custody. Some were forced to undergo torturous anal examinations that authorities falsely believe can confirm homosexual activity.
In more encouraging news for the queer community, the Reverend Megan Rohr was elected Bishop of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America's Sierra Pacific Synod on May 8th. Bishop Rohr is believed to be the first transgender person to serve as bishop in any mainstream Christian denomination. They pastored Grace Lutheran Church in San Francisco and also served as community chaplain coordinator for the San Francisco Police Department, according to the Religion News Service. The Sierra Pacific Synod ministers to 180 congregations and more than 36,000 members in Northern California and Northern Nevada. Bishops of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America serve six-year terms. The 41-year-old clergy person has not exactly been camera shy. Bishop Rohr is a well-known homeless advocate and street activist in the Bay Area and was featured on the TV series Queer Eye. They've been profiled in Cosmopolitan and Time magazines, where they describe their struggles as a young queer Christian, saying, "The people who were in my religion classes with me would sing hymns when I walked by to try to get rid of my gay demons, and I would just sing harmony. I didn't know what else to do." Bishop Rohr lives in San Francisco with their wife Laurel and the couple's two children.
2021 is already the worst year for LGBTQ rights in U.S. history. That's according to a new report from the Human Rights Campaign. Republican-controlled state legislators and governors have already passed 17 anti-queer laws this year. The previous record of 15 was set during all 12 months of 2015. The HRC also counts an additional 11 bills currently awaiting gubernatorial signatures and dozens more in process across the country. Trans youth are proving to be the most vulnerable. The HRC report was issued just as Montana's Republican Governor Greg Gianforte was signing yet another state law banning transgender athletes from participating in school sports. 69 more trans sports bans are among the more than 250 anti-queer state bills introduced so far. 35 of them prevent trans young people from accessing gender-affirming medical care. There are at least 15 so-called bathroom bills to outlaw trans people using gender-segregated public facilities that are consistent with their gender identity, such as campus restrooms and locker rooms. Meanwhile, two other queer advocacy groups have issued an open letter to the National Collegiate Athletic Association. GLAAD and Athlete Ally are urging the NCAA not to schedule its tournaments and championships in states that have enacted anti-queer laws. The country's premier collegiate sports authority did just that in 2016, when it moved events out of North Carolina after Republicans there passed the country's very first bathroom bill.
Finally, 23-year-old Owen Hercom has been sworn in as mayor of Bangor in North Wales, the world's second out non-binary mayor. Hercom's official ceremony was delayed by the COVID pandemic. They were actually elected at the age of 22 last year, making them the youngest mayor in the country's history. Hercom says they fell in love with the town when they moved there to study 5 years ago. They've also been involved in local politics ever since. According to Out Magazine, Mayor Hurcomb is second only to Mayor Tony Briffa of Hobsons Bay in the Australian state of Victoria, who served between 2010 and 2012. Briffa is both non-binary and intersex.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending May 15th, 2021. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is recording remotely during the COVID-19 emergency. It's written by Greg Gordon, edited by Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more.
And you can read the transcript and listen to News Wrap each week by subscribing to our This Way Out radio channel on YouTube. For This Way Out, I'm Marcos Najera. Stay healthy.
And I'm Michael Lebeau. Stay safe.
Extra, extra, read all about it. Extra.
Are you signed up for our new e-newsletter, Inside This Way Out? We send them out every few weeks, briefly reviewing recent and previewing upcoming programming, looking back our more than three decades of broadcast history, and deepening the conversation about your favorite international LGBTQ radio show. All you have to do is email us at info@thiswayout.org. And be assured that we don't share or sell your email address or anything about you to anyone else, and we never will. Find out about our upcoming James Baldwin Teach-In, a global queer read-in virtual pride event, live streaming on Instagram and YouTube, June 25th, 2021. Again, to receive the occasional Inside This Way Out and let us know you're listening, email us at info@thiswayout.org.
What does motherhood mean? What does womanhood mean? What does family mean?
A new trans novelist tackles complicated questions later in the program, just as classic queer literati have been doing throughout history.
Langston Hughes and Walt Whitman, coming up now on The Rainbow Minute. Langston Hughes was a fan of Walt Whitman's work. Like Whitman, some of Hughes' work contained literary explorations of overt homosexuality. Those include his poem Cafe 3 AM and Seven People Dancing. Other unpublished poems seem to be written to a black male lover. The short story Blessed Assurance deals with the father's anger over the queerness of his son. Both Hughes and Whitman kept their sexual orientation under wraps during their lifetime. Langston Hughes died in 1967 at age 65 from complications after abdominal surgery related to prostate cancer. Hughes' ashes were interred in Harlem under a floor medallion in the middle of the foyer in the Arthur Schoenberg Center for Research in Black Culture. This is the entrance to an auditorium named for Hughes. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Dustin Richardson.
Military personnel will have to shower with homosexual.
What do you think goes wrong when people shower with homosexuals? Do you think it's the spray makes it catching? To accept the principle that homosexuals can't shower with other people is a degree of discrimination that goes far beyond this. I mean, we don't get ourselves dry cleaned.
Hello, I'm Barney Frank, and you are listening to This Way Out, the international radio show for all our sexually diverse communities.
A trans woman, her detransitioned ex, and a cis woman walk into a novel, and drama, hilarity, and truth ensue. So do great reviews for the book and a fascinating interview with the author by This Way Out's friend Rosie Wilby of Out in South London on Resonance FM.
I'm delighted to be talking to Tori Peters about a fantastic new book, Detransition Baby. Hi, Tori.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's lovely to meet you, albeit virtually, because I really loved your book. So many congratulations on it.
Thank you.
I'm going to sort of give you my personal summary as succinctly as I can of the book, but feel free to completely correct me if I'm not doing it justice, because there are a lot of layers to this, a lot of depth. But largely speaking, it tells the story of Reese, a trans woman living in Brooklyn who has a series of Fleabag-esque unstable relationships with inappropriate, unavailable men. She arms herself with a sort of protective, barbed humour, yet desperately yearns for the real love and family that seem tantalisingly just beyond her reach. So when Reese's former lover and former trans woman Ames comes to her with an unusual co-parenting proposition, also involving Ames's pregnant cis partner Katrina, it isn't something that Reese can easily dismiss. Does that sort of get to the gist of
Yeah, I think you did a fantastic job. I mean, honestly, the hardest part of these interviews is when people ask me to like summarize my book, and I'm like, I don't know what to, it's hard. So I might steal that from you.
feel free. Let's start by talking about Reese, because I found a lot to relate to in Reese's conflicts. I'm a cis gay woman, although I'm a cis gay woman of a certain vintage, shall we say. So I grew up in the UK in the 1980s at a time, well, that an era that has just been depicted in a TV show here called It's a Sin, which really kind of hit home just how homophobic the world was then. And I think arguably you could say homophobia was as vile and awful then as maybe transphobia is now. So I really kind of related to the idea that the sort of bourgeois existence with a nice house and a nice partner and a nice family set up and kids and all of that seems really unavailable. But also there's this sense that kind of queer possibility is evolving so quickly that it almost is becoming available, and that even makes it perhaps even more emotionally complex, because maybe you could have it all if only you could meet the right person and find the right setup for you. And Reese illustrates some of these conflicts early on in the book by laying out what she calls the Sex and the City problem. So I wondered if you could maybe talk a bit about that, about the sort of four solutions that women have for life.
Sure. It's a little tongue-in-cheek, but Reese basically describes the Sex and the City problem. She's looking around, she's looking for ways to live, and she sees that most of the cis women around her have solved the problem of finding meaning in their 30s through the sort of archetypes depicted by the four characters of Sex and the City. You know, you can be a Miranda and have a baby. You can be a Samantha and have a career. You can be a Charlotte and have a husband, or you could be a Carrie and maybe find meaning through art or expressing yourself. But the problem for Reese is really that those things are still just out of her grasp. You know, like each one of those options, maybe you could do it, but there are all these obstacles. So just, you know, it's tantalizingly close, but you know, to actually be respected as an artist, as a trans woman, you know, that's a path that I'm trying to forge right now. Dating as a trans woman is a whole thing, you know. And then the hardest probably is to be a mother. It's the thing that I think is the most kind of charged, and the most people are most surprised at the idea of trans women as mothers. And so for the book, I sort of was like, well, of this Sex and the City problem, I'm going to take what seems like the hardest one, the baby, and I'm going to go right at it.
Yeah, and you certainly do. But it's really interesting that you say that people are surprised about trans women becoming mothers, because you actually talk very poetically about the other type of mothering that happens within the trans community, the sort of intergenerational support and nurturing that happens amongst queer people, but particularly among trans women. So we almost are a bit hung up on mothering only meaning one thing, but I think you very, very eloquently depict how it can actually mean other things as well.
Yeah, a lot of times people leave the families that they come from and they're looking for a family, and we do end up sort of raising each other, and there are a lot of models. If there's a young trans woman who's coming to me and it's like, how do I live? The model for that is inherently a little bit maternal, like from like, here's where you get your hormones, here's how you should dress. And also built into it is the sort of difficulties of the sort of maternal model where it can create hierarchies and resentments where it's like, who are you to tell me how to live? Or you know, we all don't exactly want to be like our parents, you know, and that can also show up in sort of trans community. So I wanted to talk about mothering as it exists in queer community and in the family arrangements that people choose. But also I wanted to talk about the kind of like, I think there still is in a lot of ways a yearning for us, the sort of for having a child, for raising a child, for having that kind of stability and commitment over a period of 20 years.
Yeah, well, it longer, I guess, often. You know, we ever really stop needing our parents, much as we might like to think we don't. Let's complete the triangle of key characters and talk a little bit about Ames and Katrina, who work together and are having a relationship. And Katrina is pregnant when we first meet them both and doesn't yet know about Ames's past life as a trans woman. So tell us a little bit about Ames and Katrina and their relationship.
Ames was Reese's girlfriend as a trans woman. And that's actually between Reese and Ames was one of these complicated relationships that you find amongst trans women, where Reese had transitioned much earlier, Ames did transition later, didn't know as much. And so there was a sort of mother-daughter dynamic between Reese and Ames at the same time that they're both, you know, fully consenting adults and they were together as girlfriends.
Yeah.
But that Ames is, over the course of Ames's time as a trans woman, when Ames was named Amy, she found it very difficult to live. She had never quite reconciled herself with her gender. And what she really didn't reconcile herself with was the sort of losses of being a trans woman, the kind of the reduced opportunities, the just kind of daily struggle. And she was pretty dissociated from herself. And after, you know, a period of time and a period of difficulty and some specific incidents that I don't want to give away spoilers, she detransitioned and she lived as Ames, a man. And Ames went on to work in a company, didn't really tell people that much about his past, started an affair with his boss, Katrina, and he thought that he was sterile from years on hormones. Mm-hmm. It turns out, no, not so much. And he got Katrina pregnant. And it's interesting because that's the thing that people have been like, can that really happen? And I got that little detail from some people I knew who did, you know, had been on hormones for years, went off for a while, and, you know, suddenly found themselves a parent. So,
wow. Yeah. Cause I did not know. I did not know that could happen. That's really
But the medical establishment told me, and told most people I know, that that will never happen. And yet, you know, amongst you meet enough trans people and you find that really anything's possible.
Katrina is an interesting character as well, because she's a woman of colour with a history of divorce and miscarriage. So I think it certainly seems like she has a lot of empathy when she does find out, although it's a shock to find out about Ames's past as Amy, and also to meet Reese. She seems to have a lot of empathy for queerness, and she's quite accepting of this proposition and the setup, really.
Well, she's divorced, like you said, and I actually dedicated this book to divorced cis women. And the reason I did that is that I actually see a lot of parallels in the trajectory of divorced cis women and trans women. When I was writing this book, I was looking for sort of models on how to live, and I started reading a lot of books by divorced cis women. And the reason that I did that is that at first I was just like, there's something incredibly comforting to me about these books. And then I began to think about it, and I was like, actually, the trajectory of divorced cis women is so similar. Mm-hmm. You live your life a certain way, thinking your life is going to look a certain way, and then there's a break or a realization where you're like, something hasn't worked, there's been a failure. Then there's that break, and then you have to start your life over in a lot of ways. And you have to start your life over without reinvesting in the illusions of the past, or being bitter about, you know, your reduced opportunities for the future. And that really is a challenge for trans women too. You know, I transitioned at 30, and everything I had built in my 20s felt like it went away. And I did feel the like allure of bitterness, or feeling like that everything was so hard. So when I created Katrina, it was partly also to create a conversation between trans women like Reese and cis women like Katrina, and to have a conversation about like, what does motherhood mean? What does womanhood mean? What does family mean? And for someone like Katrina, who did, you know, spent 37 years or so of her life in a marriage and was like, it never really fully fulfilled me. Mm. And it's hard to say why. And it wasn't that she's actually queer. It was that she was constrained by a certain kind of expectations of very traditional heterosexuality and the institutions around it. And so that's when she was like, well, I don't know if queerness is going to work for me, but at least these people are trying something new. And this whole family setup, I'm open to it because I need a change, and these people are thinking about how to do a change. So I'll get on board for as far as it seems like it makes sense.
The other thing you do really well in the book is to weave in a sort of debate and discussion about queer politics and trans identity and culture.
A lot of my opinions about being trans are probably wrong. And if I say them on Twitter, you know, like they become a kind of cant or dogma that can be attacked or can be, you know, debated in ways that aren't fun. Whereas in fiction, I can just kind of give them to a character and see how the other characters react. And what I'll often find when I have the characters playing with these ideas is that I change my mind about them. Like I might be wrong about it, or the characters will show me things that like are incorrect about these things that I thought was so brilliant. And it's a kind of place to play with it.
I really loved your book, Tori. Thank you so much for talking to me today, and all the best with it.
Thank you so much for having me. This was such a pleasure.
The book is Detransition Baby. The author is Tori Peters, and the interviewer was Rosie Wilby. Rosie's own book, The Breakup Monologues, has just been released in the UK and is coming to the US in July and Australia in August. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from Marcos Najera and Michael LeBeau, produced by Brian DeShazer, from Dustin Richardson, produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns, and from Rosie Wilby. Some of the music you heard was performed by The Hue, Yes, and from the TV show Sex and the City. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Yavanna Foundation, a bequest from Christopher David Trentum, and donors Christopher Matthews and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on WEFT Champaign, Urbana, Illinois, KTWH Two Harbors, Minnesota, 5GTR Mount Gambier, South Australia, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned, y'all.